Welcome to your Right to Speak discussions on social justice and advocacy. This is episode 56, and I'm your host, Salvatore. On today's episode, we'll be talking with Chris, who has been an editor for CYC Podcast and Your Right to Speak for about 8 months now. We'll be talking about the residential care system today. Chris has lived experience in the care system and has also been and is still a very strong advocate for young people in care, and has done some previous work at the former Ontario Child Advocates Office. I'm excited to have Chris on the show today, and I look forward to our discussions. Chris, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey, so I am Christopher Cottle. I've been an editor. Luckily, Salvatore actually got me the job working with the CYC podcast. So I've been really lucky to be a part of the project for the past 8 months. It's been a lot of fun. A lot of really awesome discussions have come from it. And it's really nice to work with a former person that I've worked with the Ontario Child Advocate with. And then having Wolfgang be our boss at the, who also does work at Humber College, has been like just extremely resourceful, extremely fun these past 8 months. And I've just like learned a lot, seen a lot, and like heard a lot of really great things.
And we should say that Wolfgang's a good boss, just in case he's listening. We're going to do in your Right to Speak fashion and just dive right into the first question, and we'll see where this conversation takes us. So if you can explain to the listeners your time in care, what have been some of the gaps and challenges you've found within the system, and what have you found worked?
So I was in care for 13 years, a long portion of my life, more than half of my life, and it was weird. Like growing up, you're in this, you have your family, like most people have their families, and that's their immediate circle. You don't really have to deal with anything outside of that, mainly as like their friends, their teachers. But when you're in foster care, you get this extra layer of life where you have therapists and social workers, foster parents, and people who you have no clue, about, or like who you've never met in your life, who know a lot about you. And so meeting a lot of people in that ecosystem was extremely new and weird. I loved meeting new people, so I guess it kind of worked out. But it was a different dynamic growing up that not a lot of kids should have to go through, in terms of just like the social dynamics of when I go home. Like, it's not like I go home and I rest. My life picks up at home. Like, school was kind of like my sanctuary for me, being able to have like my social circles and my friends. And then when I left, I came back to my reality, which was I'm a foster child, I have foster parents, I have social workers, and all these other different pieces, like things that I'm accountable for and that like are part of my life. When it came to like problems, I guess it was really just coming to terms with the fact that like your life is going to be different moving forward, and like you're gonna have people like social workers who show up at your school, and your friends are gonna have to ask questions, and you're gonna have to explain that. And your teachers are gonna think of you slightly differently just because you have external people like coming in, like double checking up on everything that's happening. I remember one time having a parent teacher interview, and my social worker also came because I had a lot of problems at school, right? So like imagine having like me, a short, like black kid, like 9 years old, having a 40-year-old white woman and my foster parents along with me, having to explain to two different parties why I was performing inadequately at school. So I guess like that was like my quality of life, like problems that I faced. I mean, they were significantly far reaching. The medication, so I was diagnosed with ADHD upon like a year of me going into foster care. And the medication was always like a point of contention in my life when I didn't want to take it. I didn't think I needed it. And it arise like a bunch of different kind of like not like issues, but like talking points that were a point in my life always. Like, and it having medication actually streamlined me into therapy as well growing up, which I guess like if you're taking medication, you should always do therapy. I think that is like just a good thing, a good best practice in general. But as a child, like you're 8, you're 9, you're 10, you're 12, you don't know what the hell's going on. You don't know what you're doing. And like all these people are making big decisions for you. And the biggest thing growing up is I remember like one of the most prominent things people always said was when you're 14, you have like, this is when you're able to start making decisions for yourself. This is when you're able to start being a part of your plan of cares, when you're able to start like actually being involved with the life that people around you have been like deciding for the longest period of time. And it was a big transition. Yeah. Like turning 14 and then having all these things, like I started questioning everything. I started questioning why people were doing things, why certain processes were the certain way that they were, because like you spend so much time just being complacent and kind of just trying to survive. You retreat to your friend circles, you retreat to your foster siblings, or if you're close to your foster parents, you don't really try to think about your life as a whole and like what's going on. But yeah. So that really like changed up my life. Another thing too, when I went into foster care, and then when I left foster care to go into kinship when I was 16. Within like 8 months of living with my aunt and uncle, I gained like 20 pounds, and my doctor realized that like I was malnourished a portion of the time while I was in care, not eating properly, due to like either like lack of like resources availability at my foster homes, or just like either depressive episodes or just things that just making me not want to really interact and engage. And that kind of all made me like aware of just like the fact that like you go through care, you spend a lot of your life really not trying to think about the fact that you're in it and you're in the system, that you're going through these motions, until like you're able to take a step back and realize, wow, like there's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of things that never need to happen to any kid, and someone should never have to go through these experiences. And you kind of just realize, just like, I don't know, you can either take it with you and become stronger with the experience that you have, or you can just go, you know? So, yeah.
You said a few things that I want to jump on for further explanation. The first piece you said was that it's kind of having an extra layer to your life. How did you navigate through all of that?
So, I mean, I said earlier that I really like meeting new people. Which I think kind of helped. A lot of people who met me liked me, and it made it really easy for me to like understand like the kind of relationships. But I think the weirdest thing really was like, you grow up and your life is confined to your family, and then you get into foster care and your case opens and you get a caseworker and you get a lawyer and there's a family service worker as well. You were introduced to foster parents in a very short period of time. Sometimes you get introduced to your guidance counselor at school as well. Some other kids will get pulled into the principal's office after an ordeal like this would happen for them to be aware of what's going on. And it makes you aware that like your life really isn't in your hands. And there was some comfort in that, and knowing that like the adults that were around me seemingly liked me, and I felt comfortable with them being around me and them making some decisions for me. So for a large portion of my life, I was content. But then, yeah, as I turned, like when I started getting older and I started being able to be a part of my plan of care meetings, being a part of like all these other things, I realized that like, this is a lot of work that like 7 people manage. and you have to like, then now you're a part of all these discussions and you're hearing things and things, and you're a 14-year-old sitting in a room with like 3 other adults and things are flying over your head. People are talking about long-term goals, short-term goals, like your updates with your family. What do you want? Like one of the biggest questions for me when I turned 14 was like, what do you want to do? Do you want to age out of care? Do you want to go into kinship? Like there are options for you. And a 14-year-old can't make those decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you've mentioned that, I mean, in some respect, like there wasn't, until you hit 14, there wasn't a lot of your voice added into your care. And that's something that I know is a recurring issue within the system itself. And, you know, where I struggle with that is when, you know, I think young people as young as the age of one should be involved in their care. It's very much of the adultism research that I've done. I'm a firm believer in that. And I think, you know, if you were involved in your care right from the beginning, things wouldn't be flying over your head, right? On top of that, it sounds like it, you know, they weren't meeting you where they're at. You know, they're using a lot of jargon that a lot of 14-year-olds don't know, you know, and that's the bigger issue, right? So I was wondering if you can speak to that more. Do you feel like young people should be involved in their care right from the beginning? Like,
so it's hard. I mean, like, I don't think a baby, a one-year-old is able to be like, I consent, right? But as you get older, I think that the biggest shortcoming from CAS was the fact that they didn't take into consideration that the children that they brought were going to have different lives. And because of that, that they were required to have different skill sets that they needed to be able to go forward and be able to be like a contender in this world, right? So it's a lot of like, even like looking at the legislation and like the work that like the CAS on CAS's Unzero Child Advocate did, even the OECAS, a lot of the work was preventative based to just make sure that children just weren't harmed in any capacity, right? Weren't able to really experience, grow, make mistakes, make decisions for themselves. Just because, I mean, like, we're children of the state. The government has complete responsibility over us. If anything bad happens to us, it's their fault, right? So there's a lot of accountability that was put in place prior, which makes it very bureaucratic for like social workers and like other like third parties to like get involved and like assist with children's lives. But the biggest thing is like every single child that I've met in foster care throughout my life, after aging out with the Ontario Child Advocate Office, has been extremely intelligent, extremely privy to understanding the information around them and be able to like pull and piece together different concepts to be able to understand the full picture. And I think that if CAS took the appropriate amount of time to actually educate children when they got into care in the first couple of months about like the responsibilities that like all these different players in their life play and the decisions that would be made for them, it makes it easier for that transition to happen.
I agree. And I think, you know, like just going back to like some of the stuff flying over your head, what happens, I mean, the current place we're working at now, I've seen like youth just take on the jargon and they're saying stuff that they don't necessarily know fully what it means, right? And I think it's important when, you know, youth are involved in their planning care that we really bring down the language to them. And if we're using jargon, to really explain it and what, you know, it means to use certain things.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think the biggest thing like from Plan of Cares was honestly like the rights, like recap, right? Every single meeting you have, you just be like, quick time, what are your rights? Give me 10 rights, give me 5 rights that you just know off the top of your head. And like growing up before I got a part of like the Ontario Child Advocate, I never understood the value of knowing that information, right? It was just something that you just like quick fire off the head, top of your head, because you don't want to see your soul's work anymore and just want to go play video games or whatever. But when I started like getting involved with like the youth advocacy, the rights-based like stuff, I started realizing it's like, no one made it important because they didn't care. They didn't want to spend the time to, but then knowledge is power and you can't, like, everyone needs to know everything, like the things that are going on in their life and the decisions that are being made. And like your rights is another point of contention where you can use that to be able to get the things that you need, the resources that you need, or you can use that to be able to properly advocate for yourself and say, hey, things aren't happening in my home.
Right. You know, and it's one thing to tell a young person what the right is. It's another thing for a young person to fully understand what the right is. And to just add another layer to that, you know, every young person perceives a right very differently. And it's my job as a residential counselor to understand how that young person views, let's say, the right to water. What does that mean to them, right? And I think that's lacking in the field in general. We talked about some of the challenges and gaps. I'm going to totally do a social work and CYC thing and do strength based right now. What are some of the things you found worked in the system?
I think
long pause.
Yeah. So I think one of the biggest things that I loved about like growing up in care was the fact that I realized at a really early point that my foster siblings were resources. That like I one of my first foster homes I got in, there was another girl who had moved from another foster home. She was 16 and I was 8 at the time, and we had like just talked. I mean, like obviously like an 8-year-old doesn't really understand like and can't really hold like crazy conversations about like your life and decisions that you need to make. But that simple relationship made me aware that like any person, like all these people are my siblings by law. We're all children of the state. So, I mean, I got a bunch of other siblings across the province that I just need to like link up with. And when I realized that, I started asking more questions. I started being a lot more bold with wanting to engage with multiple organizational like events, like the BIAC from the Toronto CAS, or Toronto Foundation. I did a lot of work with the OACAS, did a lot of work with the Ontario Child Advocate Office. And that like made me realize that like, okay, so even though there's a bunch of kids that are like all going through a bunch of trauma, all like regardless of their situation, if they have positive experience in care or negative experience in care, we all are in it together. And it's best for us to be able to leverage one another's experiences to be able to make sure that the next person doesn't have a bad one. And that just adding on the little bits of information, whether it's, hey, you can get a driver's license when you're 16, you can get that like partly funded by CAS, or like making sure that like someone is on the ball about signing up for like your health insurance when you're like, for all this other stuff, so you can like get your glasses when you age out of care and stuff. Another positive thing is a really small thing, and it's very niche because there's not a lot of people, I mean, I've met yet to who've been a part of this, but former youth in care who are also social workers are like the creme de la creme. They're so helpful for like you understanding that like you can survive. The biggest thing is honestly understanding that you can survive and that there is a good side, or at least like there's a way for you to be able to have like a living for yourself and know that like not everything is all grim. Not everything that my social workers are telling me, that everything that my foster parents are telling me is going to turn out bad. There are other kids in care who've gone through the same motions that I have, who are making $100,000, who are like living comfortably, vacationing in the Bahamas and whatnot. So like when I started realizing that like you can, and that you can be successful, and that there are other people who have done it in the past, that really made me proud actually to be a foster kid. And knowing that like there is this underground community of all of us who have gone through this like ridiculous trauma, but we all are coming out on top. We're at least trying.
No, when you said we're all in this together, I thought of the High School Musical song. My mind went straight there. You know, you're kind of alluding to, you know, the question I was going to ask anyways, but I'm going to ask it now, like mentorship piece, it sounds like, right? And, you know, there's been a large amount of talk that when youth transition out of care, one of the major things that is needed for the transition process is having like mentors and mentors. So I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that, and what else do you think needs to be added into the transition process that's not added in now?
I could say for a fact, like I wouldn't be here talking today if I didn't have mentors. And a lot of the other foster children that I know that are like successful in their careers and their paths of life have also like not been able to make it there without having mentors. Whether it was mentors while you were in care growing up, just like being able to tell you like, hey, what do you actually want to do with your life? What kind of goals you want to set? Or it was like aging out of care and having the resources for my CYW? I don't even know.
Something.
My old transition worker, like her helping me with like signing up for OSAP and making sure like, and when I got kicked out of my house, like calling me every single day, making sure I was alive, making sure I had a place to be, right?
Aftercare worker.
Yeah, exactly. Aftercare worker, yeah. So like, I think like one of the biggest things that needs to happen is like mentors for children need to get in like as soon as possible. And they don't necessarily need to be a part of a child's life throughout their entire like experience and care. but like they can come in at a crucial point in which like a child is able to like understand like, hey, there are things that I want that I can't, that I don't know how to get, that I don't know how to like achieve, or like I don't know what path to take. And like that's when you bring in a person who has an additional resource set to be able to be like, hey, kid, I can tell you what you do. I did this, I made these mistakes in the past. And that, and like starting at like I would always say like 16, like getting a kid 16 with transitional worker and making them prepared, because you literally only have like 2 years before like you get cut off. You get that you get that like last check, and then you're on like your aftercare benefits. And like it's weird. Like you don't have anyone else. Like you don't, and a lot of kids in foster care and that I've known that have aged out, like even though they have resources, like we all kind of fall into this like loop of just like we don't got anyone else. And because we all think the same way when it comes to like growing up, you don't have many other people to be able to support you and be around you. So like when you're in that time, even though like you have all these resources around you, you feel like you're just no one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's difficult for the transition that like you're in the system and you have, let's say, 24-hour support, and then you age out and it's not there anymore, you know, and there's some unfortunate, harsh realities that like end up happening. And, you know, for me, you know, having that mentor right there, having a mentor who has lived experience, who has kind of, you know, done the mistakes and knows how to navigate through certain things that I could rightfully say some CYCs and social workers don't know how to navigate through, right? It's hugely beneficial. You know, unfortunately, though, I think it's right to say that there's not a lot of aftercare services out there. There's not a lot of mentorship programs out there. I can probably count them on my, you know, hands, and, you know, that's it. And that's a huge gap in the system. I did some...
I mean, you know, I was going to say, like, growing up, my time in care outside, like, my foster parents was pretty... Like I tried to make sure I got everything, like my social work. I made sure I got like a tutor. I had like 4 CYCs like growing up, and like the utilizing the CYCs like while I was growing up to be able to like set my long-term goals, like do my homework and do my tutoring and stuff, was like, if I didn't have that, I don't know like right what like where I would be right now. And I think that like a lot of other kids like miss out on that opportunity to get that additional support while they're in care. And it's like these resources are available, but like sometimes foster workers, like foster parents and social workers don't want to take the additional time to be able to go through the process of setting up something for someone. And like it really shows, like you can like the person who I was before getting all that mentorship from all those individual people is not the person who's talking on the microphone right now. And like I feel really like I feel a lot of gratitude to like from my previous like mentors and things like that. And I really hope that moving forward, more and more kids are able to have that same sort of resource, because it's
the hope for the future.
Yeah.
I'm going to change the conversation a little bit. This is outside of the question. So I'm going to go the reflective route right now, which I think is important. What is the one thing that you think a social worker, CYC, foster parent should have that could positively impact you? What is like the one quality do you think, if you can say one quality?
For a social worker or for foster parent?
Let's do both.
Okay. Because I think there are different mm-hmm. things for each person. I think when it comes to a social worker, the one quality is really just like empathy. You need to be able to like a child, because the one biggest thing, and like I always say this now because I worked with children over the summer, I'm quite aware now. Children are so perceptive to anything. They can tell when you're feeling like stressed out. They can tell when you're feeling like really happy. They can tell when you're scared and when you're sad, right? And the people in my life that exuded like a ridiculous amount of empathy. I remember like when I first got into foster care, I think it was after like a year, I met this one social worker who had worked with another kid in my foster home. And she became my my social worker after a while, when my social worker left. And like the relationship that I had with her was very like basic beforehand, but like every single time I saw her, I always had a smile on my face. She was so positive. She was exuding like charisma and just empathy. And like, you can tell that when you talked to her, when you approached her and when you talked to her about like genuine problems, like she was adamant of listening. She wanted to make sure things were changed. And like, that's one thing that like, if you're dealing like, and I don't want to even say like problem child or like, say like you're dealing with like a bad apple, but like the children who like are going through like who suffer from the most trauma, who are really hard to like deal with, people like that being a part of their lives like make them open up instantaneously. I was extremely abrasive to like to like the new social workers and new things that after a couple of years of being in care, but having someone like her in my life and my other social workers afterwards, like with that same sort of charisma and the same sort of empathy, made me feel comfortable like opening up and talking about my family issues and talking about like how I feel about being in care, how I feel about my medication. There's a lot of the times, not everyone's out like for the best thing for you. They just want to get the thing done, right?
It's just about for some people, unfortunately. Geez, time's flying by. what is the one quality you think a foster parent should have?
When I think of like a good foster parent, I think of someone like a parent who like lets their kid take off the trainers and fall and get back up and encourage them and be like, try it again, and just keep on going until they finally are able to go like more than 2 meters without falling. Because the biggest problem is that we have so much preventative legislation and laws put in place, like, and rules for social work, for foster care to have when it comes to interacting with children, to the point where, like, sometimes your life is, you feel like the satirical image of, like, being in, like, a bubble, and, like, there are just things like, don't let this child see anything, don't let this child experience anything, because they've done enough, they've seen enough, right? And that shouldn't be the case. You should allow, like, kids should get scrapes and bruises and like, and get themselves back up and learn from those mistakes, right? And every foster parent who gave me an opportunity for that extra freedom, I've learned how to be responsible as an independent person moving forward. And like, without that, I don't think I'd be able to like survive. And it just goes to show that like, when you have a parent who's willing to encourage you to make mistakes and encourage you to try the things that you want to try, that gives you all the power to be like, okay, I can survive. I can make this. There are people around me who want to support me. And it's not like they're just getting a paycheck. Because a lot of kids in foster care, even though like their foster parents might seem nice, back of their mind, like a child knows, like, you're getting paid. You're getting money to be able to support me. You're getting money to be able to pay some extra bills, whatever, right? This is just an extra additional like load on your basket that you just don't want to, you don't have to deal with, but you're taking the extra time to.
It sounds like it's about showing the young person that it's more than, right? And showing and teaching those important skills that you just mentioned. We're near the end of the show. I know. I'm going to ask you our trademark question. I'm sure you know it's coming. What does advocacy mean to you?
It means a lot of things, honestly. My time working in the Ontario Child Advocate Office made me extremely aware of how many people want to advocate for themselves or advocate for other people. And what I genuinely think it is really just like having someone in your corner who they don't even have to speak sometimes. They can just listen, right? They can just like be around to just hear what you're going through. You go through the motions and then like, you're like, all right, man, I'm there for you. Or it could be the person who's like, all right, I'm there for you and I'm going to get something done, right? It quantifies to that, but at the end of the day, it really is just people just wanting to like get things off their chests in the most like best way possible that everyone knows and that no one has to go through those same experiences again. Like growing up, like I I've met like older generations, foster kids from like the 80s. I've met people, like, I've met children who got into care like within the past 2 years. And like, it's the same type of people. It's the same type of feelings. Everyone doesn't want it to happen to no one else. Everyone wants to make sure that that next child that they, because you envision yourself in another, I see another young person growing up, they don't have to be Black. They could be like Asian, they could be white, they could be Indigenous. And I see a part of myself in them. And like, they're also like part, like they're part of my family. Like legally, they're part of my family. So like, I want to make sure that my family is doing as well as possible.
What a great way to end the show. Love it. Before we end off, is there anything else you'd like to share?
I guess in the new year, we might be switching things up a little bit. I've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes with Salvatore and Wolfgang in regards to expanding the amount of posts that we have, the new topics that we're going to be talking about. So I guess the only thing I can really say is just like stay tuned for next year and keep on tuning in. And I hope that you guys enjoy what we have coming up next.
Exciting things happening. Your right to speak will be posted on the second Wednesday of every month. Thank you again, Chris, for taking your time out to speak with me. It was great. Thank you. It was great. If you know a child or youth that would like to be on the show, or if you have any ideas of what topics you think we should be talking about, you can email me at yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. That's yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. Let's raise awareness together.